What is going on, everybody? This is a special on-the-road edition of Five Rounds. I'm John Ramdean. He is Robin Black. We are in Las Vegas, Nevada at Circus Circus at Vince Neil's Tattoo-Wadoo. It says Eat, Drink, Party. That is what we're going to do. He's rocking the rat shirt, a little leopard playing in the background. What a week it has been here in Sin City. UFC 209 went down, but it wasn't just about 209. It's been an adventure for us right from the get-go. We left Toronto to come to Las Vegas, and we have experienced a lot of things. You did the UFC Sidekick event.
Yeah.
We met some of the greats of mixed martial arts, some of the greatest trainers, Duke Rufus, Dean Thomas, incredible competitors. What's your biggest takeaway from this week leading up to UFC 209?
That's a tough question. It has been a really fun one, and we called to book this restaurant to kind of go out, finish here, and have a beer and look back over the week. And I knew it would be a really big and kind of fun week, but it was for us to be in it, you know, to be deep in it. We get immediate feedback from people of the little bit of, you know, our little contributions too. You know, we add a perspective, I know that we do, of how we absorb the fights and how we pass it on to people. And people are really, really good to us. They make us feel really welcome, I guess maybe partly because we're not always out in the middle of it.
I've got to give a shout out to all the supporters because they've been fucking awesome all week long. It just feels like we're doing the right thing, trying to get the best info out to our viewers. And, you know, as we talked about, we went to the MMA Awards. There's just so much stuff going on, and get to mingle with the thing with the athletes and the people behind the scenes and all the supporters, just from the fans, from the UFC management, the athletes, the trainers, and all the other people that make this massive machine go around. It's just a cool experience that not everybody gets to be a part
of. Yeah, and that's why we're trying to share it and bring people on the road as best that we can with it. But there was a lot of things. It's hard to know where to start.
Dean Thomas, he was up for Coach of the Year at the MMA Awards, lost out to Conor McGregor's guy, John Kavanaugh. Dean Thomas had some words to say.
Well, he won for team, for best team.
Of course.
And then walked back, he was walking away, and he's like, I'll actually redo it for you here. John is where the microphone is. And he's literally leaving, and he's like, and he walks back. Oh, yeah.
Hey. Hold on. No, wait. Hold on. Can we get some menus? You don't mind?
Yeah, and some beer.
Yeah.
So we'll get some beer.
Starving.
He walks back over and he grabs the mic and he goes, And by the way, one more thing. John Kavanaugh will never outcoach me, he says.
I'm howling in the stands of that. But you got to spend some time talking to the incredible mind. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Maybe some beer, too. Yeah, what do you got on tap?
We have Orchard. We have Corona Light. I believe Michelob.
I'll have a Michelob. Please.
I like Corona, but light. Maybe I'll have it with a tequila. I'll have a Corona light and a shot of gold tequila. Thank you.
So we'll start with that. We'll pass these menus over
light
to...
Light beer by itself.
Fellow Vince,
on your last
fan,
day.
Bobby T.
That's not right. But Dean...
If you're not familiar, we're here at Vince Neil's because we're all hard rock fans. And Vince Neil, the lead singer of Motley Crue, legendary.
So we needed to be here. They invited us in here to... do a couple of shoots here.
Dean Thomas.
But yeah, Dean, Mike Brown, Duke Rufus. We get a lot of insight from these coaches. And Modelo?
Yeah, Modelo.
You said Michelob.
Oh, yeah, Modelo.
I'll have a Modelo too then, please, and a shot of gold tequila. But they share some pretty cool stuff with us. And when people come in and say, wow, I love the work that you guys are doing, that means a lot to us. And it's a nice thing to hear. But it's even more important is it leads to a conversation where they're willing to share stuff with us. And so we get a lot of really good insight that we'll digest and then kind of apply to sharing ideas about fighting in the next weeks and months.
For Dean Thomas, is there any specific piece of nugget that, again, you guys spent a lot of time chatting and talking about fighting philosophy? Was there one thing that you get to leave Las Vegas with, say, wow, that's cool, I'm going to be able to... Carry on with that philosophy and add it to your repertoire, so to speak.
There were some small perspectives of his that will change the way that I think I'll have to play with them. But the biggest one was when you're talking to somebody and you realize that you're not crazy.
Well, Blanco, tequila, Patron.
Patron, please. Yeah. When you realize that you're not crazy, because guys like Dean, who are great at what they do, and he's probably the best at it right now, they are looking at everything as a constant flowing change. So you cannot be looking, and this applies to everything. It applies to food. It applies to everything in life. If you're thinking about how to, you see something that you like, or you see something that you'd like to accomplish, or in a fight, you see something that, a skill you'd like to develop. If it's relevant right now and it takes you 2 years to learn, you'll be 2 years behind by then, because the world will change and you will have been preparing something for today. And so Dean, Mike Brown is another one, again, at that same great gym at ATT.
And Conan Silvera, the team there, just simply amazing. No wonder they've had the success they've had.
But they are thinking about tomorrow when they train today. And as much as Dean took that shot at Kavanaugh, which Kavanaugh will appreciate,
sure.
and it's in part Dean showing that he understands how shtick works today and how it's a vital part of communication, is playing with things like that.
Didn't he do stand-up comedy on Friday night?
Yeah, Dean Thomas also did stand-up comedy on Wednesday night
Adam.
Which is MMA roasted.
Yeah.
We didn't make it. I had meetings at the UFC.
We loved their tweets. Bobby T was reading them to us when we were
roasted
at the weigh-ins because we're anticipating all the Khabib situation. And we promise you, we're going to get to all the stuff that happened at UFC 209, which want to give you the backstory of everything leading up to a very successful, bizarre, satisfying night of combat.
Yeah. Also, MMA Roasted, he wrote most of the jokes for the MMA Awards, which was also really fun. We saw a lot of craziness and fun things. I presented an award to Dana for
Leading
Man. Yeah, that was cool. And we watched Michael Bisping hold court. I talked to Michael Venom Page for quite a long time, who's very, calm and quiet and humble, and it was very interesting to talk to him about how, in a lot of cases we talk about how fighting is an expression of your personality and the essence of who you are. And in his case, it's a part of a personality that he never gets to express any other way. He's not cocky. He's not arrogant. He's not all playful and dancing and crazy.
Yeah.
He does that when he fights. It's real to him when he fights. It's a way and a time that he can do that. The rest of the time, he's got a girlfriend or fiance, I forget, and he's a quiet guy, lives in England. He was, he didn't have the loudest suit in the room. That was either me or Cody Garbrandt.
Lando Venata told me the same thing. He said when he's at Jackson Wink, he said he's the guy with his head down. He gets to express himself once the cage door closes.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is one of the stories coming out of the MMA Awards. I don't know if you've seen this. I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pictures of Eddie Bravo and Michael Bisping jaw-jacking each other. And it's interesting because you follow this stuff and nobody has the story of the right information.
So let me give...
Because we were there. We saw it all.
The entire time.
Yeah.
So let me put it to you a couple of ways. So this camera right here was gathering some moments of it. And Mike's manager came up to us.
As a matter of fact, it was this
camera. It was somebody very close to Mike, works closely with him, came up and said, delete that right now, delete that right now. And I said to him, we're not going to show something of two guys bickering, because taken out of context, that's the very problem with everything that we see in the world. We see a tweet or a moment or a shot of a camera, and then people apply whatever meaning they want. Oh, look, Michael Bisping's an asshole. Oh, look, Eddie looks scared. Eddie was not scared.
Michael Bisping is not an asshole.
No. None of that. But in a moment of that, people pull out bizarre things. So we're not going to show that.
But you add alcohol. You're in Las Vegas. People are trying to let
loose.
What
is really happening is, people are having a really good time.
That's what it was.
And sometimes you've got alpha males and all types of things and a bit of pushing that is meaningless to them and meaningless to the people around them, but very meaningful to people who don't understand the scenario, would freak out about it. Eddie, who's a good dude and really was just like, Mike, calm down, Eddie. Eddie doesn't get shook by nothing. Calmly sat there. Mike was animated. He did use the C word and a few others, but it was meaningless.
Yeah. From my perspective, was Eddie is, we all know, Eddie's a jiu-jitsu guy. He's a big fan of what is going on. As a matter of fact, as we're shooting this, the Eddie Bravo Invitational is going down today. So he's such a fan of that art. And he knows that GSP has this relationship with Henzo Gracie, and more specifically, John Danahar. And the Danahar Death Squad is like one of the big things in MMA, or in martial arts right now. And a lot of those guys are looking to make the transition over to MMA. One jiu-jitsu guy that was very successful this weekend, Rafael Lovato Jr., working with Evolucio Tai, 13-second knockout. So Eddie Bravo's like, well, if he's working with them, I want to help solve that riddle of the leg lock guy. And I think Bisping at the time...
Mike's like, what are you saying? Like,
well, if he gets the takedown, Eddie's saying... Yeah.
And Mike's going, listen, like...
After a couple of wobbly pops. Yeah, and at the end, they ended up hugging each other, and they love...
Which is exactly why you don't show a clip like that. And if you're going to address it, you address it in real context. Mike, a fun-loving, animated guy who does is not to be messed with.
Yeah, of course, he's the man.
Misreads momentarily. If you clip only that, you see this ridiculous moment, when in reality, in the end, they have this cool conversation. Everybody has a laugh. It doesn't mean anything. Mike is a character, and they're like, that Mike Bisping sure is crazy. And Mike's like, you know, that little Eddie's not so bad. And that's how it's left. But you know, there's a weird responsibility now, and there's a debate over it. There are people who would say, your responsibility is to show that clip. And it's like, my responsibility is not to take out of context moments that you know in our culture have repercussions that are, you know, untrue repercussions. People start acting like this means this, that is now a fact. We go off into the world with that fact. And that's dangerous. And so... But you're exposed. You almost wish you had time to film 4 or 5 days worth of recaps, because all of these little life lessons and little moments of exposure in fighting and in how people get along and in the art form itself and in the politics of fighting, we see all that throughout the week.
One of the cool things that happened this weekend, the UFC announcing officially, we mentioned Michael Bisping, the massive fight that the MMA world needs to see, the return of the former welterweight champion George St. Pierre. He is set to take on the middleweight champion Michael Bisping, moving up 15 pounds. It was talked about for years and years that GSP would take on Anderson Silva. He said it was offered to him. I think we had one of the first interviews with George, and he said after he beat Johnny Hendricks, he was offered the fight with Anderson Silva, and he's like, I'm taking a break. So that's just not working for me. Maybe sometime in the future. And I know a lot of people are on him for making reference of the stock market over and over and over again. But the reality is, Michael Bisping, you know, I know Dana didn't want to talk about money fights. He got pissed off when I talked to him about it. But this is one of those fights where everybody's going to benefit. Michael Bisping is going to talk the hell out of the fight, which he already has from the very, very beginning. He's not as big as everybody expected him to be when the two matched up. Yeah. And I think
he was a little dehydrated from the night before. So let's look at the menu.
Oh, yeah. And I know what I'm getting. I'm getting eggs. Yeah, there's this steak and eggs.
So I was literally just thinking as you were saying that, do I want a welterweight size meal or do I want a middleweight size meal?
No.
Listen, what the fuck are we talking about half the time when we're having a global open conversation about fighting? This is the fight they made.
Yeah.
So
I love this fight.
I love this fight because they made this fight. If somehow I was being asked in advance of it, if I actually had an influence in the months out, me or the global we, people are like, you know, what fight would you like? We'd like a survey. What fight would you like to have made? Michael Bisping or Yoel Romero, George St. Pierre or Yoel Romero, and they take a vote. And it comes out, it's like 72% Yoel Romero and 28% Michael Bisping. And then they went with Michael Bisping, people would be outraged.
Yeah.
But no such vote was taken, no such vote will ever be taken.
Yeah, of course not.
What will be done is what the machine will benefit the most from. It will always be done. Yeah. So, and this will be done in this fight. This will be done in a fight 6 weeks from now. It'll be done in 8 other fights this year. It'll be done as long as you watch fighting. So what you have to ask yourself is, am I going to experience emotional outrage every time
I think that's part of the appeal of the sport.
Yeah, but if you enjoy being outraged, have at it. If you find this to be troubling or it makes you have disagreements with your friends that seem excessive, or if you snap at your wife because you're outraged, or if you if it does anything bad, just stop doing it.
Yeah.
Because you will never win this fight, ever. It is always going to be the fight that you don't think is right if you have a sense of justice based on rankings and what and a sense of recent accomplishments. But you will never win this fight. You'll be outraged forever.
I totally hear what you're saying. But one of the things that was interesting was when you talked to Michael Bisping, this is an assignment for him. He's facing off with another martial artist who's going to be bigger than he's ever been. As Mike pointed out, he's one of the best athletes. In addition to that, George is the man. George and his team, they're going to have a formula to try to not only win against Michael Bisping, but try their best to damage Michael Bisping. GSP's 35. Michael Bisping closer to 35 than he is 25. This fight, to me, makes sense because you have two masters of combat that are trying to go into... They're there to solve the riddle of the other man.
And that'll be... That's what they're into it for, but they're also into it for money.
Yeah.
And success. This fight is great for Michael Bisping. It's great. It's the best fight he could make. The guy's smaller. He's older. Who'd you rather fight today? George St. Pierre or Yoel Romero?
Yeah, yeah.
I'd way rather fight George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
And that's saying something if you think about how good and scary Yoel Romero is. Way rather. And I'm going to get rich. For George St. Pierre, I think this is a fight that George believes is an easier fight. A second belt, he's going to get rich. Those two guys love it. The UFC, Dana, whatever face you want to put on it, they love it. It'll make them rich. If we don't love it, and we would therefore not buy the pay-per-view, this whole thing would fail. But we will buy the pay-per-view. Some of us will complain while we're doing it, but we'll still buy the pay-per-view. And so in the end, I'm now at a point where I'm worried for people. If they're just going to continue to get frustrated, no problem, man. If they're going to continue to get frustrated, I just want them to, like, let that go. It's not... I think we're also having the steak and eggs.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, two. One each, please.
Yeah.
Yep. Over easy for me.
And then I think over to those guys after.
Yeah.
Over easy for me as well.
Yep.
How's the leg cooked?
Medium rare.
Yeah.
Toast, white wheat, sour
wheat? Wheat, please.
Please. Oh, yes.
This is to you, my friends.
I'm sure we're all anticipating that there's going to be a boatload of people tuning into Michael Bisping and George St. Pierre. I don't know if the same thing can be said for UFC 209, which went down Saturday night at the T-Mobile Arena. The rematch between Tyron Woodley and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I think it was an intriguing fight, but the sense that I got, I'm sure the sense that you got leading up to UFC 209, it was the fight between Tony Ferguson and Khabib. That was the one that everybody was tuning in for. Lots of other great fights on the card. Alistair Overeem taking on Mark Hunt. The third fight in the UFC for Lando Venatas. He took on David Timur. Luke Sanders, Yuri Alcantara. So many great fights on this card. We've got to talk about the main event. We all know that Khabib, weight-cutting issues. Now, we'll talk about that first.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
There's people out there kind of defending the whole situation, and we just want Khabib to be healthy. You talked to George St. Pierre.
That was George's first
response. And he said, that was, you said you were talking to him.
His first response, he's like, is he okay?
Yeah.
Man, can we all try to be like that?
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean? Is he okay? Like, not, what's the news? Or, oh, man, oh, no, what? Is the human being okay? I'd like to grow up and be like that if I could.
I left the arena last night and I was going back to our hotel at the Excalibur, and I looked in at the beer house right beside.
We've stayed at the Excalibur a lot of times.
It's
super got
smoky.
A lot of charm.
It's very smoky this time.
It's the
Way's,
lower,
Way's dying.
It's
here
the lowest
today.
End. Way's shaking his head right now. There's so much smoke.
So much
in that
Las
place.
Vegas, you need to get your shit together. I don't think
Las Vegas is perfect.
No, they
don't change anything.
No, we need to change the smoking thing. Nobody needs to have the smoking inside the buildings. Everybody can walk outside. The T-Mobile Arena has that thing around where people can go
when
smoke
you get
and come
to a
back
point
in. I get
where
it.
Basically it's like, look. We want to come to town, and now we are working, right? So we are focused on work.
Yeah.
But our work is people fighting in a cage,
first of all.
So, but
talking
outside of people working, they want to drink.
Yeah.
They want to smoke. They want to eat.
We got to convince them not to smoke, though, in general.
You can't. Some people would be like, well, you shouldn't drink. And other people would be like, you shouldn't eat. Some people would be like, you know all those hookers? No. No, absolutely not. Like,
all kinds of bad stuff everywhere.
You don't get to pick and choose.
I understand that. But I'd like to pick and choose whether or not I'm fucking sucking in secondhand smoke.
So, yes. Now, the biggest difference is the food.
Yeah.
The hookers. Mm. And whatever other sins people are committing don't affect our health.
Fair enough.
So I see your point. Yeah. The difference between smoking is they're affecting all of
us.
So having said that, people want to come to Las Vegas and do what they want. And one of the things they want to do is go watch fighting. And they didn't get to see the fight they wanted to see. So that's what we're talking about.
So I left the arena, and I was walking back to our hotel, and I looked into this beer house, and Sean Shelby was sitting there with Ali, who is Khabib's manager, and I wanted to go in to ask that very question, say, I hope he's doing okay, but I just left it at that. I'm sure these guys have been hammered with lots of support, because that's, I think, if you're a fan of martial arts and you're a fan of people, you want Khabib to be healthy.
Of course.
You know, even
he's
Dana
a superstar.
White,
he's a genius. He's brilliant. Before we go into this, since we're sharing some of the behind-the-scenes stories here, this is the vibe I've got here is we're done. We're having shots of tequila, eating food, and just sharing our own chat with people. Going into this, there was a lot of talk, as odd as that would be, that when I released my breakdown of Khabib and Tony, that Khabib blocked me on Twitter.
Turned out it was
Ali. So there was a little back and forth between Ali and myself, but it resulted in actually both of us having a fair bit of respect for the other. We both stood up for what we believed in. And we both did a bit of research with other people and found out that, okay, that guy's a real guy in this business. Ali, the job he does for his fighters and the job he does for the other side, the UFC, the only good deal is a deal that's good for everyone.
Symbiotic relationship.
The UFC is thrilled with how these fighters, Cody, Frankie, and they get paid. They come through, and the UFC's happy and they're happy. So Ali's doing a killer job. That was a really cool kind of behind the scenes thing too. Was he went out of his way to let us know that we were appreciated, our team, after considering banning us at one point from talking. And I thought that was very cool of him, and it shows his flexibility.
I think the scenario is very similar to the Michael Bisping and Eddie Bravo scenario, where both parties just didn't have the right information. And
if you see only a piece of it, you think there's some kind of craziness. Yeah, but really, whether it's Ali and Robin or Fight Network or it's Bisping and Eddie, you've got complex human beings with different motivations that eventually realize their motives are all very similar. They love fighting. They love the martial arts. They're trying to... They're involved in forward motion on something very positive. So, but that was one of the interesting little back... subplots of our crazy week. But Khabib, I said this week, and this is my true opinion on this. He's a winner.
Yeah.
How did you become a winner? How did you become the truly one of the great fighters in the world? You did it through any failures that take place, you find your role and you fix your role. People aren't winners by accident. They're winners because everyone has little sub failures. His are so small and subtle, and he fixes them so quickly. It's just win, win, succeed, get better, become greater, and that's who he is. So missing weight is his fault. He will, regardless of what happened in his body or what the physical nature of it was, he will find his role in it, and he will change it.
Sure.
He's going to be a world champion. He's going to go down as one of the great fighters in history, and he'll do it through repairing whatever flaws he has, however subtle or offside they are.
Do fighters always understand their role in things? Because if you are, I'm just using Khabib as an example, well, I've done things this way every single time. Now, he missed the weight.
Three plus pounds with
Danny Castillo. Yeah. It's like, okay, this is strange. This has never happened to me before. Let's monitor things going into the next fight and the fight after. Yeah, I'm doing things the exact same, and now the weight came off.
My feeling, this is my feeling, and it's only a feeling based on what data I'm gathering, is when you look at greatness, so he wants to be he is great, and he wants to be the greatest. And to do that requires sacrifices and pain and reaching levels that other people aren't willing to reach. Now, what if coming into a fight at 178 pounds when you're a dominant top game player was something achievable if you put yourself through hell. And because he's so willing to put himself through hell, he waits till late to cut that weight, willing to sacrifice himself and create pain right. in himself to ultimately get a value out of it in size and strength, and then use that to be the greatest of all time. Many do it.
Yep.
A lot of big weight cutters. Conor McGregor's the 145-pound champion. He's bigger than Habib.
Yeah.
So sacrificing yourself to make weight for the purpose of victory is an admirable thing, in my opinion. It's just if you make that choice and your body shuts down.
Cyborg.
Yeah, Cyborg and Habib, they're similar examples. You've decided to make a choice to sacrifice yourself and put yourself through pain for an advantage that you earned through your hard work and your pain.
Right.
And that's what I think he was going for. Because 10 weeks out, he could have lost more weight. He has control
over that. I'm sure in his mind, it's like, well, 10 weeks out, I'm exactly where I've always been. You know, 5 days out, I'm exactly where
I'm... If you failed once, where you've always been is somewhere where there's a possibility of failure. With the variables of your body and the variables right.
Is it body chemistry changing? Just yep. the things changing
exactly.
in your body?
And just because you've always done something, there is a philosophy that says what it took you to get you here is will not be enough to get you to the next level.
And or that to is, keep you here.
Yeah, or because everything changes. So what was enough to keep you here will not be enough. Johnny Hendricks would tell you he did everything it took him to get to the pinnacle, and it wasn't enough to keep him at the pinnacle. Mm. You know? So that's very interesting, but Habib is a genius, and he is somebody to admire, for sure. And people like that, maybe you look at it and say, if those guys can fuck up, you know, if those guys can make mistakes, then we all can.
Yeah, of course.
And so if you admire him, like I do, you look to that and say, what I'll gain from that, what I'll learn from that is... how do people like that respond to their mistakes? And that's what we can admire, is how he deals with this.
And we talked to Dana White. He's unsure of the whole situation. We also talked to Tony Ferguson, who was fucking devastated yeah. by this whole situation, because it was a very different yeah. scenario because of his pay structure, the way it was mm-hmm. set up. A lot of fighters, there's a guarantee show money.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, because of how much yeah. money he was getting paid... for this
he was
going to
get camp
fight.
Costs.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it didn't happen. Well, and why would we do that? Because if this fight is off, we're going to lose 300, and I'm making up a number.
Yeah, yeah,
random,
of course. Yeah.
For the purpose of illustrating an idea. We're going to lose 300,000 pay-per-views from Eastern Europe alone, or wherever.
Yeah.
If we lose that, we can't give you our show money, which we have customarily done to everyone. So we want to be upfront about that in advance. If you take this contract will have all these benefits for you, but here's a risk. If this fight doesn't happen, we can't do that. It's too costly. When you sign that contract, you do it. And it was Rogan who told me that that was camp cost, because he's friends with Tony
yep.
and he's... somebody that
Rogan, Eddie,
yeah, yeah,
Ferguson,
yeah, and he's and Rogan Ferguson, they're very close,
yeah, yeah, right,
and
right.
Rogan's also comfortable. He's earned his right to be able to speak about some things. But again, some people are like, what the why didn't they pay him his thing? Up front,
yeah.
it's laid out to you
yeah.
that here are many of the changing risks. So. Unfortunately,
why wouldn't you yeah. bet on that? I mean, it's like, well, Khabib's going to make it to
yeah.
this fight for sure.
If Khabib makes it to the fight, I make this.
Yeah.
If Habib doesn't make it, this, you know? So, but there were times where it's also a weapon. Tony was like, good luck with that weight cut a couple of times.
Yeah.
Because Habib also wouldn't get paid.
Yeah.
You know? Which it's unfair. Tony agreed to this contract and he agreed to the structure, but it sucks for him. It's fine for Habib not to get paid. He must make weight. You must, you know.
And his team yeah. told me that this is not about money. He said
no.
He is a very wealthy man.
That's cool.
Which is super cool. And, you know, one of the things, his philosophy and his mantra if he became champion was, I'm going to dictate who I fight. And the only people that I'm going to fight
Love
are people
it.
That are worthy of fighting for a UFC
yeah.
championship, which he and his team believe
yeah.
is supposed to be the highest
yeah.
martial arts honor.
That's
it's
so
not about
cool.
money fights. It's not about, you know, the try, the
so
shtick.
Cool.
It's all about who deserves it based on combat. When I heard that, I'm like, wow, that's so cool.
And you know why it was so cool? Because everybody's going the other way.
Yeah.
Everybody's going. You win one fight. You're like, and I'm not picking on Tyron. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be an even bigger fan now going forward, especially because even more people are going to be ragging on the man. Plus,
fuck
I met his
people.
Mother, and she was the sweetest.
Yeah.
35 grandkids.
Yeah.
And she was like, I just want to tell you, I watch your show all the time. And you and your guys, they give my boy a fair shake, and I appreciate
that. And we have to. Yeah. And
but, I mean, we also don't shape what we say around people's moms or the fighters themselves. There are fighters that have a bad opinion of us or of things we say. They don't have a bad opinion of us. They know we work hard and we care.
However, Mark Hunt, I think he has a bad opinion of me, man. That guy was just on me all... He was in a bad mood.
Yeah, he was angry. Yeah.
He was angry.
Yeah, I thought he did well.
I want to talk about the main event.
I just my last thought on Khabib is I don't know the man. I hope that I get a chance to get insight into him, because what you're watching is somebody achieving the highest level of greatness. And when you're achieving the highest level of greatness and you get to witness a setback, what you're witnessing is a brilliant moment in time.
For growth.
Yeah. This is a moment, a brilliant moment in time. This, it's not something to look at angrily, as angry as it's
you would
fair
have
to get
angry.
For him, but for us, it's like when us, the fans, us, the you know, the world, we get mad when people miss weight. We do. It's disrespectful.
Sure, but I think the fans do have a right to be angry in this sense, because, and again, this is nothing against Khabib as a person, but imagine I'm from Halifax, or I'm from Kansas, or I'm from Orlando, and my guy, oh my God, I took a week off of work, I flew to Las Vegas, I paid for my ticket, I spent a shitload of money, and this happened.
This is why making weight is so mandatory. But ultimately, you're watching somebody on the cusp of, you know, history.
Yeah.
And in a setback like that, what you get to watch is how they respond to it. And if he doesn't respond as well as I think he will...
I think we all expect that.
We expect him to. Yeah. We expect him to respond and be even better. Tony, too. This is... Tony
was looking
he
good.
He was so sharp.
He looked so good.
I had this feeling that we were going to see something we'd never seen before. Yeah. We were even at the open workout, and he wasn't trying to just show off. He was just... That's how he's been moving.
Yeah.
This is what he's been doing. Yeah. It was really, you know... Wei and Aaron at TSN, they were like, this guy could be an action hero.
Yeah.
You know, Wei, you think he could be an action hero, right?
Wei shaking his head, yes.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're watching that, the physical nature of what he was doing, and the ferocity. Eddie kept saying that that scene in Scarface, you know, where he just will not be broken.
Yeah, the shower scene with the chainsaw.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the things I thought was super cool is that Ferguson understands his role. He's selling the fight. There's a lot of bravado, and that's why people were tuning into it. But the opposite is I got to see when the air was taken out of the balloon, and he was very, very emotional, because he and his team and his family, they all believed, after this weekend, I'm going to be the fucking champion of the world.
And he was probably, with a win and everything that came with it, was making, I'm going to throw out the word $500,000, but I suspect it was more.
Yeah.
You know, and now that's
for a lot of people,
changes.
That's life changing.
He's going
money.
Home different than everything he dreamed. But you said balloon, and if we imagine his to peak, to be in peak physical condition, mental state, the ability to do your what you do at the highest level is like, imagine like a balloon. It swells out, and then that peak will reduce.
Yeah.
That new thing is your new max. So your job is to actually be capable of swelling it even further. And by reaching this new maximum, he has set it. It becomes your minimum. That is the least of what I accomplish now. This physical and mental and physiological and emotional state
and
I was
flexibility in
is
there.
Now is now the limit, the minimum I expect from myself in the future. I must be greater than that. And if he can achieve that, we're at a point in fighting where we're going to see things we've never seen. We're already seeing that.
I think we all expect that. We've talked to some of the greatest minds in mixed martial arts this weekend. We talked to Dean Thomas. We talked to Duke Rufus.
Yeah.
We talked to Javier Mendez. We've just talked to so many incredible minds, and they all say the future is terrifyingly scary and exciting at the same time. What's going on? The main event, Stephen Thompson, Tyron Woodley, the rematch. Before that fight went down on the prelims, before Sidekick was live, we all had the chance to see this 145-pound battle between Mirsad Bektik and Darren Elkins. And I think this is one of the fights that set the tone for the rest of the fight card, because Bektik, a huge favorite. Bobby Way and I were walking through New York, on our way to the venue.
It would cost you $700 bet to make $100,
I
think.
And to me, it just did not make sense that somebody of this background, of Darren Elkins, and battle-tested and skilled, because you saw him. It's only been recently that he went to Team Alpha Male. At this stage of his career, still change things up and want to do things differently explains the type of fighter that this guy is. But he also has the miles. We all realize he has the miles.
And this fight put miles on him, too.
And I talked to Justin Buchholz after that, who freaked out about the whole...
He's doing great.
Cody Garbrandt.
Obviously.
You know, so when you look at...
Once you get that level, like, what it is to achieve a new level is to open up the next possibilities. And I think Buchholz is getting to a point, and he was enjoying the weekend, too, as well he should, you know. There are people out in the game right now that are reaching new plateaus,
The
goal is to go beyond that plateau.
Darren Elkins took the beating, was never broken in that fight. We saw the blood, we saw the guts, we saw the heart, we saw the finish. So when you see a fight like that, and then you make fast forward your way to the main event of UFC 209, where a lot of people perceived that there wasn't a whole lot going on. And I think it's unfortunate that people are missing that. What's going on is the danger of two perfectly highly evolved, skilled athletes that have to be completely perfect for 25 minutes, because they've both been in camps with the biggest, smartest minds, the best training partners. They are so goddamn sharp that if you overextend, if you rush things, if you fight out of character, you're getting knocked the fuck out.
So My take tends to be now...
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. My take tends to be trying to figure out the big picture so that somebody in there will change their perspective. Let's say that at one time, you know, this is our understanding of wine. And I've used wine a lot recently because it's a simple analogy today. And this is our example of understanding of wine...
I wish I had a glass of wine right now.
We can arrange that. I've still got to do Ask Robin Black after this, and I'm going to have at least one more tequila. So, there's very little. When they didn't understand wine a lot, and they didn't understand where wine was going, dry wine was good. And I'm paraphrasing. I'm creating an example. I'm not telling you a history lesson on wine. Dry wine was very good. Sweet wine was cheap and terrible for losers.
Right.
You know? Later, you realize they're all beautiful. They're all complex.
In their own way.
They're all different aspects of the same thing. Today, we're at insane swings of the pendulums of momentum in a fight, and ridiculous amounts of damage are beautiful, and subtlety is ugly and terrible, and we hate it. It's just because we don't understand like we were in the beginning. We like only one kind of wine is good, the other kind is shit. That's not true. It's a complex thing with many, many layers and ideas to it. And it's the same thing with fighting. That fight is just as beautiful as the Bektik fight, you know, with Darren Elkins. The main event is just as intricate and it's just as incredible. Now, if you said to me, I enjoy dry wine, and I hate sweet wine. And I said, why? And you said, I don't like sweet things.
Fair enough.
What you are telling me is a truth. It's a truth of your perspective. Your perspective is, when I taste this thing, I like it. When I taste this thing, I hate it. So if you want to tell me that that you do not enjoy, Wonder Boy versus Woodley, I'll give you a hug and thank you and say, it's really cool to know what you like. But do not tell me that was not a beautiful fight. Do not fucking dare tell me that was not a beautiful fight. That was an incredible fight.
The reality is that they'd say that to you and it's like, yeah, that guy's a fucking idiot. I'm never going to hang out with that guy.
That's great. Because people who develop an expertise in wine do not care what
exactly.
somebody who drinks wine yeah. straight from the bottle
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
And I don't care what they think of my opinion of that. That was an incredibly beautiful fight with layers of subtlety.
100%.
If you don't understand that fear and intimidation and stress
God.
And the threat.
On both sides.
Of this.
Oh,
the multi-layered of the danger of that one, the lead leg being like the jab, but being so powerful it can hurt you. An incredible athlete feeling his cortisol levels rise and his testosterone levels lower from the stress of that as 12,000 people look on and everything is on the line. If you don't understand it, that's your problem.
Yeah.
By all means, tell me you don't enjoy that and I will support you in it. Say, I don't like that kind of fight. I will gladly be with you and say, this is my friend Dave. He doesn't like this kind of fight. I like what Dave has his opinions, and I'm proud of Dave. But don't you dare tell me that's not beautiful. That was a beautiful fight.
It was multifaceted in the sense that both guys had a specific way that they were going to win this fight because they were trying. Like when I looked at Thompson, his lead right hook seemed to be one of his best weapons, and the check hook as well. It felt like there are certain points where he was hoping to draw Woodley in so he could utilize those weapons, and Woodley too. Everybody's like, why isn't he wrestling? Why does he keep backing up? It felt like he's allowing Thompson to get comfortable moving forward so that eventually...
Yeah, so Thompson eventually stopped moving forward, and he stopped coming to him. But it's electric in that. It's electric because if you lose your focus for one moment,
second.
If you just... Or you hear a boo and you think, okay, fine, I'll just do it
I'll go at it.
There were one or two times where Woodley was lucky, and he did get caught with the one on the way in, where he closed his eyes and went for it, where he actually failed in his assignment to stay hyper-focused and survived it because of his other abilities and skills and reaction,
He's the man. If you look at his resume and look at the level of competition that Tyron Woodley, like, this is the one thing, people, you have to understand. The reason why Tyron Woodley is so goddamn good and he can compete and defeat anybody on any given day is all of his attributes, his skill level, his mental fortitude, and the fact that he has been in there with insane talent during times in Strikeforce and the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And now to go 50 minutes with Stephen Thompson...
Yeah.
The guy that everybody believed was going to be, or still believes, is going to be a future champion in the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Yeah.
It just tells you where Tyron Woodley is at.
I agree. And I was working on that UFC sidekick, little second screen shoot, with Eves Edwards, who is close with Tyron. And we were talking about the fight, but then we were talking about Tyron and the rest of the world. And he's like, he cares too much.
Hmm.
And the reason I bring that up is what you're saying is true. This is the world champion, earned, deserved, defended, and proven.
Yeah.
And some people will never give him a fair shake. And I don't care about that.
Yeah.
And I hope he doesn't.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't either.
But he does.
I know.
So he's going to have to do some personal work. He is successful.
I mean, the dude's shooting a movie this week.
Yeah, well, he's successful. He's the champ. He's made money. All of these things are good. There's still some personal work he can do to truly come to grips with it, not react to how the world thinks. What the world thinks of him is beyond his control. What is within his control is how he reacts to their reactions. So hopefully that guy works on that because he should be having the time of his life. And how people respond to him, that win... things he says, whatever, you hope he can get to the point that they have no effect on him.
Super cool fight, the heavyweight showdown, two former K-1 champions, Alistair Overeem taking on Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt was mad all week long. I told him that he was supposed to be the co-main event after Khabib had fallen apart. We got the message from the UFC.
We were told that.
And he thought it was five rounds. He was freaking out. He didn't know what to do. And then I became his enemy. Alistair Overeem, he had the shits. Apparently, he got food poisoning. Had to go to the hospital a bunch of times.
That's how you're going to lay it out. That's your expert analysis.
He had the shits. Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah.
You got something going on in the guts.
Yeah.
Either it's coming up or you have to run to the can. Yeah. The UFC was unsure if this guy would take part in the event. He said Dana White told us Alistair Overeem didn't leave the hospital until 2 p.m.
Yeah.
2 p.m. day of the fight.
So the hospital to the venue, between leaving your bed, getting through it, getting to the car, going through traffic, pulling in, you're getting in the venue at 4.
And then you got
for a fight at 7. His walkout was at 7.
However, Overeem told us, this is my 87th, 88th fight. You have 88 fights. You've dealt with this shit many times.
Yeah.
You've dealt with so many variables in this game.
What starts to happen is unpredictability becomes predictable.
Yeah.
So...
And you roll with
it. You start preparing all the things you're doing with the comfortable knowledge that some crazy things are going to happen. Yeah. And since I've faced 11 or 12 or 19 crazy things before, I've gotten better at the craziness. I don't know what it's going to be, but when I'm faced with it, it's not going to terrify me. Because that idea that I got to pull my socks on in a certain way, and then I got to have my certain headphones in and talk in a certain way, make sure I eat the certain... Well, all of a sudden, something changes. Oh, sorry, you're on in 10 minutes. Who's going to be better at that, you or your opponent?
But, I mean, the reality is, whatever conflicts or things that you could not anticipate happen throughout the day, crazy things, there's nothing crazier than stepping inside of a cage with a guy that is coming to smash your brains in. So all those other things are completely irrelevant. It's like, trust me, that's not the worst thing I need to deal with today.
And then Overeem got better as the fight went on. Because no matter what's going on in your life, he has the ability to do that. You know, right, I'm in this now. Okay, so I don't have to, whatever was happening in my stomach, I'm not aware of it. I can't be aware of it because Mark Hunt is coming at me. And in his view of the world is just Mark Hunt and his fists and his shoulders and his chest and his hips and his placement in front of him. And it all starts to be all that calibration and calculation that he's facing. And then once your brain allots all its resources to that, your bowels are probably going to be less, you know, a focus.
An issue.
Yeah.
What I found amazing about it is he had, the strategy was sensational. Attack from the outside, teep to the midsection. If you've ever been kicked to the body, it's excruciating. And Alistair Overeem, I can only imagine what it's like to be kicked in
the
body.
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, exactly. A massive guy like that. And Alistair Overeem gave Mark Hunt a ton of props going into this fight. He said, the guy is deceptively strong. Yeah. He's arguably the strongest guy I've ever been inside of the cage or ring with. But Overeem, outside dangerous. Once he got in, grabbed a hold of Mark Hunt, started smashing knees to the body. Very, very dangerous. And one of the things I was concerned about is when Overeem backed himself up against the corner and just played that shell game where Mark Hunt was able to tee off. And I asked Overeem about it. He's like, I wasn't concerned about that. I'm not getting hurt in those situations, getting hit straight to the head.
Yeah.
But when you
if I hold my hand here and we add a little bit of it and just drill me with this, or hit me with that chair,
or I just mean the force of Mark Hunt throwing a hook. Even when your hands are you not going to absorb that?
He's huge. His body moves with it. He's calm.
And he's skilled.
He's relaxed and he's skilled. And he's been there before.
But aren't you giving your opponent an opportunity in that moment to do something? Like that's his strength.
We're in our last resort, so we backed up against the wall. And we put our last, you know, set of soldiers there, and that's it. If we can just take two or three and not overreact, at one point he will either ease up or fatigue, and we'll get out. And but it's not. He wouldn't. if it was a good thing to do, everybody would just back into the corner and just wait there. Yeah. You know, and it's not a good thing to do. But the greats can find themselves in bad spots and handle it. What do you think? Should we eat this?
I think that really is it. So, you know, of course, Lando Venata lost to David Tamura, who had an outstanding performance. Amazing. A great fight as well. Really, it was a terrific night of mixed martial arts. When you look at what happened in the Luke Sanders fight, and it has been a terrific week. Yeah. And I think this is is how we need to end things. Yeah. So we got some food here, some steaks here. Yeah. I need a refill on the beer.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure I asked for mine over easy.
Yeah, me too. This
is Vince Neil's over easy. Next weekend, Vitor Belfort, Kelvin Gastelum, Edson Barbosa, Benil Dariush, a whole shitload of other cool fights going down. I'm sure we're going to share some of the other stories that happened this week as we are gearing up for UFC 209. You got to thank Wei, Bobby T, my man Robin Black, you guys for giving us your attention. I'm John Ramney. We'll see you later on this week. Thanks for joining us for all the coverage UFC 209.